Hello and welcome to Sustainable Warwickshire, a podcast talking about all things related to climate change and sustainability across the county of Warwickshire.
Hello everyone, I'm Steve Smith, a director at Warwickshire County Council, and I'm your host of our podcast series, Sustainable Warwickshire. We hope to share some of the things being done to fight climate change and support biodiversity from across the county and give you some ideas on what you can do to play your part. In this episode, we're going to be talking about green skills. It's estimated that by 2050, 4 out of 5 jobs in the UK will be supporting the transition to net zero. Clearly, this growth will offer lots of opportunities for businesses and employees in Warwickshire. Yet at the moment, it feels like there's a big change needed in order to develop a workforce that has the right skills to develop on net zero ambitions. So joining me to discover more about what we mean by green skills, the opportunities for individuals and the economy, and how they should be developed, and what support is already available for businesses, are Dr. Ben Silverstone, Associate Professor and Head of the WMG Skills Unit at the University of Warwick, and Louise Stoltz, Business Skills Support Officer in Warwickshire County Council's Economies and Skills team. Ben, if I come to you first, would you like to introduce yourself a bit more, please, and tell us about your role and the organisation and the work of the WMG Skills Unit?
Yeah, sure. Thanks, Steve. So the Skills Centre at WMG is designed to work with businesses of all shapes and sizes and to create solutions to their currently pressing and also sort of future focused skills requirements and solutions that may sit outside of the sort of traditional education sphere, such as, you know, degrees and other programs that a university would run. I guess what makes us different at WMG is, as a university department, we are heavily industry focused. So as well as being an academic department, you know, we employ hundreds of engineers, for example, because we are focused on delivering real solutions for businesses as and when they need them. And the same really applies to our skills programs. So they're all informed by the world leading research that we conduct, but they're very much, you know, applied and focused on solving problems rather than trying to impress a viewpoint upon the world.
And Louise, business skills support in the County Council. Perhaps you could just go into that a bit more about your role and what we do with businesses.
Yes, of course. So I've recently been appointed as Future Skills Business Advisor, and this role has been created as part of a £900,000 3-year Future Skills Programme launched by Warwickshire County Council. And I'll be focusing on the future innovation and the skills agenda, building an understanding of what the future skills landscape looks like in our region and establishing a network where we can share knowledge and promote best practice. I work within the business support team, which is part of Warwickshire Skills Hub, and we support businesses across the county, regardless of their size, and carry out business skills reviews. And this review process highlights a business's future skills needs, and our team are able to work with a network of colleges, training providers and universities to source appropriate skills and training provision and link them through to available funding opportunities.
Lovely. And I think we should start off by just defining what we mean by green skills. Is there a definition, Ben? What do we understand in the world of work that is meant by green skills?
And do you know what? I think that's one of the biggest problems, is that nobody really knows. And what the biggest problem I've got with it is, well, what's the opposite? Is it a brown skill? I mean, yeah. And I think that's the challenge. And through a lot of the work that we do with businesses, you know, the understanding is that every role in the future will have some kind of impact on sustainability. And I think that is probably a more important way to look at this, is that it doesn't matter, you know, what your role is within any kind of organization, you have the opportunity to have some kind of impact on the sustainability agenda that organization has. And whilst there might be, you know, discrete roles around sustainability and circular economy that are starting to emerge as it becomes a more pressing matter, I don't think that, you know, green skills necessarily sit as a separate entity alongside, you know, what happens. I think what we need to look at, and I think in some ways that we start to define it with businesses, is it, if a business is going through a transition as a result of an environmental initiative, then, you know, that is part of a kind of green skills agenda, really. So if we take, you know, looking at us as a county, you know, our important role in the automotive sector, enormous changes going on in that particular sector at the moment. They are undergoing a, you know, a green transition, essentially, aren't they, as we move from combustion to EV. So there's a whole load of skills and competency changes that needs to happen within the workforce to support that transition. And you could argue that those are green skills, couldn't you? So I think, you know, that's one of the big challenges. A little bit like, you know, we talk about digital twins and we talk about data-driven decision making. These are wonderful terms that sound impressive, but when you drill down to what that means to an individual business, a little bit harder to define.
And Louise, if I come to you, given what Ben's just said there, what are you hearing from businesses around whether they're using that term green skills or thinking about skills for the future, depending on what sector they're in? But are you hearing from them that, you know, they're looking for skills in different areas now that can support the agenda of sustainability and climate change?
Oh, definitely we are. But as Ben said, it's across everything that they do. So they know that sustainability and net zero is cutting across every industry now. And they know that they've got to keep a pace of technology, but it's trying to keep up with it. And they're struggling to know exactly what skills they need as well. So it is a, we've badged it as future skills, and that's how we've decided to term it, because I think, as Ben said, green skills, it doesn't quite fit it all, and it does cover absolutely everything. So we're just trying to help them identify what those skills are. You know, there's lots of that in digital skills across everything that they do, and try and find the relevant training. That's the problem we've got now, is that the gap between what businesses need, what industry need, and the provision. And that's where we need to try and get the two talking together and identify where that gap is and how we can support them.
I think coming to that, something that'll be really useful for businesses in the county, there's an initiative called the UK Workforce Foresighting Hub. And this is a methodology of doing exactly what Louise is saying. It's about looking to the future. What are the capabilities, competencies, and roles of the future? And how do we get from where we are now to that future in a sort of sensible way? And that process involves the technologists that are driving those changes, the businesses that are impacted, and then the providers that are going to need to come up with some kind of solution to help bridge that gap. And the outputs of this process are really quite impressive, and they help us to understand what those competencies are, where that coverage already exists within the education system and where it doesn't. So then we can sit down with providers and we can start to close that link. So I guess, you know, like with anything, starting to better define what this future looks like and what these green skills looks like has to include the businesses that are impacted by it. It's not a passive process. It's not something we can do to business and say, here's a route map to solve all your problems. The more they engage, the more they will get out of this process.
Absolutely, yeah.
Thinking about an example closer to home, Louise, my daughter's just started a college course to be a plumbing and heating engineer, and I'm sure that the curriculum will be heavily focused towards natural gas as the main fuel type. But I can also see that her curriculum involves learning about new technologies, non-fossil fuels, such as hydrogen, and how that might change the skills of those type of roles. And I'm just wondering whether you're seeing that advancement in schools and colleges and their curriculum, and how they are changing to keep pace with the net zero industry. Have you got a view on that?
So they want to. The problem we've got, Steve, at the moment is that industry are telling us that the talent pipeline isn't flowing quick enough and they're not getting the skills through that they want. And the training providers, educators are, are saying they don't understand what is it that exactly that's needed, but also they need financial investment. So a lot of these courses require equipment that education budgets just don't cover. So I think they require significant investment that they haven't got. So I think what we really need is them talking together so that they can, everybody can understand what it is that's needed. And that's something we're hoping to do with my role. I'm hoping to set up industry roundtables where I get employers from various sectors in industry to tell me what it is that they are looking for. Where are the gaps? What do they need? What provisions required? And feed this back to our educators to feed into their delivery plan for the future and see if they'll get involved financially. Will they make some financial contribution towards equipment for colleges?
This is a piece of work that we're involved in as well, because it's as a provider, you know, the education system changes very slowly. And so, you know, Steve, your daughter's probably on a course. So this course was conceived a long time ago. And so the introduction of, you know, new and emerging things is a challenge in the way that the education system works. And we're working very, very hard with you know, both the major political parties in the run-up to the upcoming general election, but also we do a lot of work across the West Midlands combined region to look at, you know, how do we make curriculum more flexible so that it can adapt and change as things come along? How can we look at funding mechanisms so that, you know, courses can be made available to employers? Now, the issue of kit is very, very close to my heart. So we do a lot of work around the battery manufacturing sector. And, you know, the cost of entry into some of these new and emerging technology areas is prohibitive for providers. And we can't really get around that. So at WMG, we have Europe's leading battery research facility, and we're talking hundreds of millions of pounds worth of investment. Even if you wanted to get in on the ground floor of that, it's a significant investment. So what we're doing is we're working with providers right across the region to say, you know, here are elements of the curriculum that you can deliver, and here's access to kit in a physical location that you can come and use. So that we're able to empower providers to provide those kinds of things to industry. And again, through that foresighting mechanism, I always use the example, you know, if someone's got a hole in their bucket, they will tell you they want a new bucket. And that's kind of where we are with the skills transition at the moment. Is I've got a gap right here, right now, help me to fill it. And I think part of our role, part of mine and Louise's role, is to go, well, yeah, we could give you a new bucket, but maybe you'd like a JCB or maybe you'd like a wheelbarrow it's helping to sort of broaden those horizons out so that it's not just about the immediate now all the time. It's about being able to, yes, address those problems now, but take that longer view as well, which is so critical in securing what we're looking at in the future. And if we think about these green industries, we've got those industries in our area that need to change. We've also got businesses that we'd probably quite like to attract to come and base themselves here and to provide jobs here. And so what we need to be able to demonstrate is that we're glued up to what they're going to need if they want to come to us, and that we're able to not have a ready-made pipeline because we want people sitting there without jobs, but we're able to switch something on that will enable us to deliver those skills for those companies. So they go, do you know what? I want to go and base myself there because they have the skilled workforce capability to deliver what we need.
Yes.
The other thing I wanted to say is that the other issue we've got is that a lot of the teaching staff are leaving education to go back into industry because the salaries are higher. So we have an issue with some of our training provider and our providers and colleges that are saying, we can't run provision that we wanted to run because we haven't got the staff. So that's another big problem, because they can't match the salaries that industry can match. So something else that we're looking at Warwick County Council as part of our Future Skills programme is a skills share, where we sort of pilot looking at releasing staff from industry into education settings to help train the trainer, so to speak. That's something else we'd really like to do.
And Louise, I'm 100% on board with that. And it really ties in nicely with a national initiative that we're looking at. So there are a couple of us working at sort of policy level that are their ex-forces, and we understand the armed force reserve model. You know, people have got a day job, but they commit past their time. And we want to pick that up. We want to copy and paste it onto education so that people in industry can do exactly what you're talking about, Louise, but with legally protected status and protection for the company as well. And you know, again, we're in a position where we can pilot that. So, you know, to anyone who's listening to this, who, you know, works in a business that feels that they can give back, I think, you know, we have some fantastic opportunities for them to engage. And, you know, it's a win-win for everybody, because you know, if we think about it in a slightly cutthroat kind of way, those businesses that lend their staff out and share their staff also get first sight of the new and upcoming talent, which is such a valuable thing for them as businesses.
And I just want to look at this this issue from a different angle in terms of what we're hearing from those who are starting out on their careers, the kind of jobs that they want. And I can imagine that would very much appeal, this discussion would very much appeal to young people, but also those who are in their later part of their careers who may want to retrain or move from one sector to another. Louise, I'll come to you first. In terms of the demand for such roles or the demand for such jobs by those who are entering the job market, what are you seeing?
Oh, it's definitely increasing, and there's the enthusiasm there. I think the problem that they face is, again, lack of provision. We've had a few instances where colleges, our local college network, have been full. But we've had people coming to us to say, I've got an apprenticeship with an employer, but I need to try and find my training provision now. So helping with that. So going back to that, we need to expand on that training provision and make sure it's resilient and future proof for everybody that's coming through. But also, I think there is, going back to this, what are these skills that we need? We need to go back, try and explain to our future workforce what it is, what the jobs are, because it's still quite vague, and trying to drill down on exactly what the jobs of the future are going to be is quite hard to sort of give a definitive list. So I think that's where we need to work on that and show them all these opportunities, because there are so many amazing opportunities coming their way, particularly in Warwickshire. And I think we need to get in earlier, into education earlier, primary schools, to tell them about these emerging new technologies that are coming and how what their future career might look like.
And Ben, if I come to you trying to marry that challenge with how your skills unit are able to support employers and to support those who we want to attract, as you raise that point, I can imagine that in our sectors that we're strong, we know we're strong in the automotive sector and the creative arts and the digital arts sectors as well across Warwickshire. Those kind of employers should have the ability to maybe do training in-house necessarily if they wanted to attract young people and talent. It'd be interesting to understand, you know, what kind of support that your unit is providing or can provide to help move the sector.
There's loads, Stephen. I mean, you know, there is a right focus on what happens for the next generation, and we need that. But we also need to understand that, you know, over the next 15 years, you know, 80% of our workforce is already there. You know, actually the proportion of the workforce that will be made up by young people leaving education is the minority. And so there has to be the right focus on ensuring that we're able to retain people in the workforce, that their roles that are at risk, they get the retraining opportunities, they get those opportunities to go and develop new skills. And we work very closely with businesses to help them to understand what that transition looks like, and therefore what those kinds of skills and capabilities that they need to work with, who in their workforce are potentially at risk, and what we can do to help, you know, retrain and reskill people, and where things are going to be entirely at risk. You know, we help organizations to understand what are the transferable skills. So, for example, you know, we talk a lot about the growth of the battery cell manufacturing, and hopefully, you know, we're a step closer to having a gigafactory on the Coventry Airport site. It's wonderful. The last thing we want to do is to steal people from all our existing businesses to staff that. And so, you know, one of the things that Louise points out, and I think is really important, is, you know, raising awareness of these kinds of roles and what these roles look like, and how do we access the different segments of society? You know, where do we get at people who are unemployed but employable? How do we get at people who are maybe at risk of losing their roles because a business is going to shut down? And how can they use those transferable skills to come across somewhere else? If you can make biscuits on a high-speed production line, you can make batteries on a high-speed production line. The transferability is huge, you know? And that's part of what we do. We don't just look at how we deliver courses. We are, you know, fully invested in that whole ecosystem of supporting businesses to make that transition. And there is also a mindset shift to go through. And we talk a lot about defined roles because that's our generation. That's what we understand. And therefore, that is what is kind of portrayed through the education system. Yeah, you know, we still have these kinds of conversations. What do you want to be when you grow up? Yeah. And for me, that is now wrong. The question is, who do you want to be when you grow up? And then from there, it's about, well, how do you want to apply that in the world of work? Yeah, there's the Japanese thinking about the world of work, you know, in terms of what I'm good at, what's needed, what I can get paid for, but then also, you know, what is good for wider society. And I think trying to shift that mindset, because skills are so infinitely transferable now that it's not about I want to work with X, Y, and Z. It's about, you know, the skills that young people want to apply. And again, that is a mindset shift and things that we need to get our head around, but will help us move towards a much more flexible system where all this kind of stuff can work. I know it doesn't solve the problem right now, but it is kind of indicative of the direction of travel. And if businesses really want to help to support that, what I would say is, you know, treat skills like any other part of your supply chain. So if you want to specify a new product, you go to your supplier, you have a conversation with them, you understand what it is that you can get from them and what that you need. You come up with a solution, they supply it, you buy it. Yeah. Schools and colleges are exactly the same. Go in, have conversations, show them what you need as a business. Help them to understand that. Help them to understand what they can do to support you. And I mean, Ofsted have this mandate that businesses are supposed to engage with providers, and it doesn't happen very well. But I think as businesses, you can lead that conversation. And again, we're here to support that.
Absolutely. So it sounds to me, I mean, this is a challenge, certainly. But it sounds to me that, you know, Louise, that the County Council can play a role of trying to bring these different concepts together to try and bring the employers and the education providers, let's call them that, together. And at the same time, there's the demand from a young workforce, but also the workforce that's already here, as Ben said, 80% is already here, who want to learn future skills, new skills, green skills, whatever we want to call it, so that they can support our movement to net zero. So have we got any programs, Louise, or initiatives that are starting to emerge in this area? I think you mentioned them at the beginning, didn't you?
Yes, if I just sort of run over those again. So as I say, so as part of Warwickshire County Council's £900,000 3-year Future Skills Programme, we're currently shaping four strands of work into projects that will encourage, hopefully, businesses to invest in their current and future workforce. So we've got something called the Future Apprenticeship Fund, so it aims to support businesses in accessing provision for future talent, as well as utilising apprenticeship programmes to retrain existing employers to ensure their skill sets are up to date and relevant. The programme will also see localised apprenticeship fairs that will directly promote opportunities to expose our communities to jobs within these new and emerging sectors. And then there's also been some budget ring-fenced, as I said, within the fund to pilot some industry skills share activity. Because, as I said, we've recognised that colleges and training providers need support from industry to understand where they need to plug the gap of knowledge for teachers.
Thank you. And Ben, You've talked about battery technology, and that, and what keeps coming up in my mind is the big employers that we've got already in Warwickshire. Some obviously that we still want to yet to attract. Are you seeing those big employers thinking about a different approach to training and development of their workforce? Are they maybe going to invest maybe in a different model, or a model that supplements the current provider network? What do you think that the big employers can do here?
I think so. There's a definite shift. I mean, one of the biggest shifts in training that we see now is the, I'm not going to say reluctance, because it's not a reluctance thing. It's a business imperative thing, that the scale and scope of change is so big, they just can't release people to do it. And, you know, that is something that as a sector, we're having to really look at. And I established, and I chair the National Electrification Skills Initiative. And a big part of that is how can we make use of, you know, augmented reality, virtual reality, other training mechanisms that mean that people don't have to be released up until the point where it really has to be the case. And we're seeing greater and greater demand from industry partners for solutions that can be delivered in such a way that disrupts their business as little as possible. And that is, you know, that is the way that it should be. You know, I won't say gone are the days where people get released and come en masse, because there's still value in doing that. But I think what I think, you know, businesses of all sizes should kind of, you know, take heart in, is that there are an increasing range of solutions that are kind of coming on stream now. And that is, you know, a lot of that is being driven by big companies, but it's also being driven by smaller companies who are in exactly the same position, that they, you know, they can't afford to lose, you know, X person for a week to go and do something, because that would have too much of a significant impact on the way their business runs. I think what is critical is, you know, Louise and I represent two different organizations, but we are in lockstep with this. It doesn't matter which one of us you come to talk to, you're going to get pointed in the right direction.
And that's really important for Warwickshire itself to be competitive, the region to be competitive, the UK to be competitive here, as the push for, you know, we want to see investment, as I said, but the push for also having our workforce with the right skills, and the longevity of having, you know, skills to retrain as well, and the facilities to do that. So hugely important. Louise, if I come to you first, I'm thinking about what next. And you've talked about a number of programmes. Is there anything more that we should be doing? Are there things in the future that we may develop different levels of support for business?
Absolutely. Our programme is evolving all the time, and we're listening all the time to what industry, our employers and the educators in our region are asking us for. So we want it to evolve. This is the starting point. This Future Skills programme for the next 3 years is the starting point, but it doesn't finish there. It doesn't end there. We're going to keep looking, keep seeing what it is that industry require from us, what training they need. And we will keep making sure that we're up to date, so that when businesses come to us for signposting, we're able to tell them about all the relevant funds that are available to them, the relevant training courses. That's our job. That's our job, to make sure that when a business comes to us for any skills advice, we're able to signpost them to the relevant support.
And Ben, as far as WMG Skills Unit is concerned, the wider university network, are you seeing other parts of the UK facing this problem? Is the university family working together on such initiatives? It'd be interesting to understand a bigger picture.
The challenge is existential. I'm going to call it a challenge, because every time we call it a problem or a shortage, it just conjures up, you know, something we can't achieve. It's a challenge. It's existential. I mean, the university sector isn't always the best place to look at this sort of level of innovation, because, you know, again, like with other traditional education sectors, it's very slow to evolve and very, very slow to change. What we are doing, which I think is really important, is we want to make sure the mechanisms are in place so that all the good things that Louise is talking about can happen, and there can be more of them, and they can be more effective. So there are some really fantastic examples of things that are coming out of devolved authorities. So we've got West Midlands Combined right on the doorstep. Yeah, the fact that they're a devolved authority means it's easier for FE and HE to collaborate. It's easier for them to find new and creative ways to use their adult education budget, which in other areas is limited by what the government say that it can be spent on. So one of the things that we're doing is being very much national government facing. And we are saying to them, if we're going to help this transition to happen and to be more reactive and for the good initiatives, the things that Louise is talking about, to really work, government need to do certain things around how education providers collaborate with one another. I think that's absolutely critical, because some of the stuff that we're talking about is quite niche. And if we've got five or six providers all trying to do the same thing, no one's ever going to get a cohort. No one's ever going to run anything. And it's all going to be a mess. So we're looking at that kind of strategic level. We're also talking to government and saying things like, look, in this technical space, you are not the specialists. Yeah, government, what we want is we want organizations like, I gave the example of the National Electrification Skills Initiative, to be given the mandate to make the decisions, to create the solutions on behalf of government. Okay, because again, you know, in this country, we look to government to create the solutions for us, but they're not the specialists. They that's not for them to do. They need to, you know, give that mandate to the specialists to then create the solutions, and then to create an environment in which that can be funded and can be developed and can be rolled out. And that's why things like this, the FE reserve model that I talked about, this engagement between providers and educators, you know, we're trying it out here in the county. There's also a national initiative that's supported by ministers to look at how that can be rolled out more broadly. So yes, it's a big national challenge, but I think it's one that actually, as an area, we are ahead of the curve. Yeah, we've got some really innovative things going on here that are not going on elsewhere. And we have that opportunity to be the place that people look to say, that's a really cool idea. That's really innovative. That's really special. We want to take that idea and apply it in our own regions. And yeah, you know, we have that opportunity.
Excellent. Well, we're coming to the point where we finish our conversations with sharing ideas and what others can do listening to this podcast. Louise, if I come to you first, what would you say to either an employer who wants to develop their workforce with green skills, or to an employee who is interested in retraining? What would be your practical advice?
Please contact us here at the Skills Hub, please. We have lots of support here to help you either find the right pathways for your staff to develop their future skills, shall we call them, for their workforce. But for those individuals that want to upskill, we have so much information and so many places we can signpost them to. We're a great starting point to start you on that journey. But I'd also say to employers, please get involved. We never know their industry roundtables. We need your feedback because that's the only way this future landscape can be shaped. This future skills landscape can be shaped.
Thank you, Louise. And we'll make sure that we'll after this podcast, there'll be a link in this podcast to those details. And Ben, same question to you, really, about anything practical at this stage from your point of view that we can offer to both employers and employees?
Do you know, it's very similar to what Louisa said. I mean, it costs nothing to come and have a conversation. And I think one of the areas that we specialize in more is supporting those who really don't know yet what they need. And I think that's really important. Even if you don't know what you need, come and have a chat. Because at the end of the day, you know, that conversation can start the journey to deciding what that future looks like. And one of the things that we say here is, you know, that come and have a conversation with us. And if it isn't us, we will send you and show you the right places to go. And, you know, that very well could be services that Louise provides. It could be some of the other providers that we work with. It could, in fact, be that what these people need to do is going to have a chat with some of our research groups to fully understand what their future looks like. So I think that's a start point. You know, there's nothing wrong with coming and having a conversation. And as far as I'm concerned, I don't know is always an appropriate answer to the question. Yeah, because there's nothing worse than thinking you've got an answer when you're not sure of it. So just, you know, if you don't know, that's fine. We'd like to hear that. Come and have a chat. And then again, to echo what Louise says, there's lots of other initiatives that are helping us to understand the future landscape. And like anything else, the more input, the better the outputs. So we want to have your input, whether it's on the local roundtables, whether it's on the national initiatives around UK foresighting. Ideally, it's both. It's everything. The more you can get involved in, the more you can have your voice heard, the better. And the more we can use that to present a unified front to government to say, this is what is needed, this is how it needs to work, all the better again. So just, you know, to get involved, I think, as I said at the beginning, this is not a passive process. In the past, education has actually driven what the workforce looks like. And that was the way that was the accepted way that it was. You know, universities would turn out professionals and they would go into the world of work. And that is the way that is no longer. We are now clients of, you know, society as it should be. So, you know, we're no longer shaping that. We need you to help us and to shape what it looks like. So just come and have that conversation. You know, we'll sit down, we'll have a cup of tea and we'll put the world to rights.
Well, there is a very strong invitation. Thank you, Ben, and from you to Louise for joining me today. And we've talked about what is still quite a journey, I think, in terms of thinking of future skills, green skills that will support Warwickshire, but also the wider UK challenge of achieving net zero. So still a journey, but there's lots of support. I've heard it from both of you, lots of support in different guises that can support both employers, employees, people who are thinking of entering into the job market, those who are learning skills at the moment. There's plenty of support out there, and I hope that those who have listened to this podcast will really take you up on those offers. So thank you again. It's been thoroughly enjoyable. So that's the end of this episode of our Sustainable Warwickshire podcast. If you'd like to find out more about climate change in Warwickshire, visit www.warwickshireclimateemergency.org.uk, and I'm sure that the information, the support that we've talked about today will be, you'll find it in that link. Thank you for listening. If you've enjoyed the conversation and would like to hear more of the same, please do subscribe. We'll be back next month with more.